time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. It's Dialogue Conspiracy, September the 2nd, 1974, Carmel, California. Labor Day just winding up, and the school year begins tomorrow. It's sort of the end of a summer season out here for us. I have a few announcements first on where to obtain the articles that I've written, because I'm getting lots of mail every week, and I'll announce on the air. The Realist, you can write to 595 Broadway in New York City, 10012, New York, New York, 10012. The subscription is $3, or you can send money to the station here to KLRB, 50 cents plus postage, and I'll mail you the copy of The Realist. The current one is the article, Why Was Patricia Hearst Kidnapped? 38-page story on everything you need to know about the SLA. The City Lights in San Francisco carries them locally, the Thunderbird Bookstore, the airport. I get a lot of letters from Sacramento about The Realist article. Buyers on Bookstore 1406 J Street in Sacramento carries it. And after you get one copy, you can get the address inside. And for $3, you can send for 10 copies and start chain letters going around the country, which is what I hope you would do, and send them to public officials and read it carefully, reread it, and then spread the word around. Usually on Dialogue Conspiracy, we begin with a lot of news, and most of it's glum, depressing for some people, interesting for others. The happiest thing I see in the paper this week, in our paper out here, is an Associated Press wire from Sacramento. And I'll begin with that because this is something my mind has been upon a long time. The Senate in California has okayed a bill to control lobotomies. This, I'll read you the article from the Associated Press. Frontal lobotomies could not be performed on a state prison inmate or a hospital patient without his conformed consent and a court order under the legislation now approved by the California Senate. The measure would also force the state to obtain a court order to perform the operation on persons mentally unable to give such permission. To obtain such an order, the state would have to prove the operation would, first, be beneficial to the person, two, there would be a compelling interest in administering such therapy, and three, there would be no less onerous or alternatives to such therapy. The Senate, on a vote 26-3 Monday, sent the bill to the Assembly for action on the Senate amendments. The performance of frontal lobotomies has been considered a means of dealing with violence-prone persons. The operation involves removal of the brain. The measure is sponsored by Assemblyman Alan Cerotti from Beverly Hills. It covers all forms of organic therapy. This includes the stereotactic surgery, electronic or chemical or other destruction of brain tissues, or implantation of electrodes into brain tissues. All patients in all public and private hospitals and sanitariums are covered by the bill. It is Bill AB 2296. Now, the informed consent, we know, has no meaning in itself, because I'm receiving letters from men at Vacaville who have been holding down other inmates and giving them double doses of injections in order to knock them out, in order to get permission, signed permission, to do this kind of surgery. They are doing this kind of surgery widely against the Nuremberg Code down at Atascadero in California, and I'm sure many places around the country. It's easier for me to follow the California system. The Atascadero does not fall under the guise of the prison system, but this bill would cover that too, because it's all mental hospitals. They're doing a lot of psychosurgery and implanting electrodes, altering people's behaviors against their will, testing them, and for the future of turning people into armies or robots who will not have control of their own will and can obey commands. This Senate bill pleases me. For those of you who listen to Dialogue Conspiracy, this pleases me a lot. It's a step forward. There's a man in Washington, D.C., Dr. Peter Bragan, who I've talked about before, who has been the forefront of fighting all kinds of psychosurgery or drug chemotherapy, electrosurgery, it actually is, because it removes part of the brain through an electrical process. Dr. Peter Bragan is in Washington, D.C. If you want to write to him for information and literature, 422 First Street, Southeast, Washington, D.C., 20003. Dr. Bragan has a tape cassette you can buy called Psychosurgery, Psychiatry, and Nazism. He has many cassettes and tapes you can order. He's been the doctor who almost single-handedly has stopped this kind of mutilation of the human being for at least 2 years as a moratorium on federal institutions. But this now would control state institutions and private hospitals. Dr. Peter Bragan has literature. You can write to him. And you could write to Alan Cerotti up in Sacramento and tell him you approve of this measure. It's a step forward to stop tampering with persons' brains, and that has been happening consistently in terms of my research into political assassinations. The victims or the patsies have been hypnotized too, whether they had drug treatment. There's no way of knowing, at least not the present time, but hypnosis has played a big part in the political assassinations. This is another bill that should be ruled out, is the use of hypnosis to create violence or political patsies or to program people for killing. If a doctor does this, and there are certain addresses that I have or institutes that are doing this and training people and using hypnosis to move other persons against their will into acts of violence and then to forget these acts of violence, if this takes place, the doctor should be prosecuted for that. That should be illegal. That should be the next step. People like Sirhan Sirhan were hypnotized, and we should find out who is doing it to him and make this a criminal case for the people who hypnotize these particular agents and then force them to lose their memory so that the cutoff is protected and the patsy goes to jail. Well, the news this week, crime in the suites. I call the program today Crime in the Suites, because Attorney General William Saxby had come out warning about a repressive national police force. He's warning us that this is a good possibility, and all of us are perfectly aware that he's a sounding board for what seems to be evident by the amount of massive police hardware that's escalating and the police force that's becoming more equipped with billions of dollars to handle the people in America without trying to solve the problems. Saxby referred to the fact that the LEAA received $3.2 billion in 6 years, and it also got nowhere. There were 6 years of the LEAA where they had four administrators, and out of that 6 years, 18 months went where there was no head of the organization at all, and yet it was spending $3.2 billion. Saxby admitted that crime comes from poverty and deprivation, but this money isn't being put back into job opportunities. He hasn't come up with solutions. And he also suggested the role of violence on TV, and I support that as a big cause of violence that we have on the streets, is teaching children how to do it. There's a visual lesson as they sit there and watch the TV and grow up watching violence hour after hour. There are solutions to this national police force. I've thought about them. I do many times when I'm doing my work. But today I want to talk about some of the problems of the law enforcement, the CIA, the violence, where it's really coming from. And if the Justice Department wanted to turn their attention to investigating any one of these cases I have before me, it would be a public service as an example of where the violence comes from. I have evidence of police violence and prison guard violence, that these are actually the agents of violence, former veterans from Vietnam that are being used to create violence on the streets in America. The CIA that brings in the drug traffic, controls everything from the Pope to the President, bringing heavy dope to encourage crime, because then we counteract with police. The use of former patients who have been used for crime. This goes again into the use up till the present time, if they stop it now, of the implants and programming of the former mental patients. The supplying of weapons by the police and military to encourage terrorism, and the manipulation of the courts with false imprisonments and dope deals and violence. And the causes of violence that I see, the use of the police agents and the military coming home from Vietnam, and the pouring in of the drugs, programming people. These are the things that have to be controlled. And what we're doing is spending our tax money just to get more handcuffs, to get helicopters, to get SWAT teams, and get heavy uniforms and bulletproof vests. And we're not really going into the causes of violence. I noticed that Jack Anderson came out today about world terrorists using U.S. arms. In the article I did on why was Patricia Hearst kidnapped, I tried to illustrate the police department supplies these radical terrorist groups with weapons, the military supplying them with weapons. Jack Anderson makes the point that the taxpayers are buying shells, machine guns, and ammunition for the terrorist group. This is what I've been trying to say all along. And he points out that storage areas are left open and unguarded. And he mentioned terrorist camps in Lebanon, Vietnam, Germany, around the world. And this is another thing that I tried to say. The army in Los Angeles is left open so that the people can take these weapons, or up in San Francisco, or wherever around the United States, the paramilitary operations of counter fighting the civil war on our streets that we will see will be done with weapons that are supplied by the taxpayer, and then come back and hit him in the back, or while he waits at an airport or a bus station, he receives that tax money back with a blast and gets murdered or his legs blown off like the LA airport. That's where your tax dollars are going. You're buying these weapons. They're put in the arsenals. The door's left open. The guards are letting this stuff go out all around the world to create what I referred to as the Occupation Octopus. We'll call Occupation Octopus is that CIA operation. It was referred to in the new Playboy magazine. It's a CIA plan for terrorism around the world, this large network. And I'm sure that Operation Octopus allows certain people to get weapons from these armories so that they can counteract later with heavier force and bring in that national police agency that William Saxby is telling us about. He claimed that the security guards at these arsenals have seamy records and nobody bothers to check their records. The defense its security command out of Muscle Shoals, Alabama, that sets up the agents to guard the airplane factories, the armories, the atomic energy plants, they screen out employees, and there's no reason why armories can't have employees that are reliable, that don't walk away and leave the doors open. And there has to be a reason why weapons are stolen and why the people on the streets are getting armed. They're getting armed because the powers that be want them to be armed. So when Jack Anderson writes about the U.S. supplying the terrorists, this is a point that I've been trying to make for the last few months. The article in The Realist that some of you read by now and some of you will be reading on why Patricia Hearst was kidnapped listed 15 motives for creating the SLA that the CIA would want. And the articles I'm going to read today touch upon those motives. One motive was to create a fear of terrorist organizations in America National and fear of kidnappings. Another was to link the U.S. terrorist to international. One was to isolate prisoners from prison reform. Another motive was to set up a police state in the power of the hands of military intelligence. And another motive was to increase the police forces. It hits upon the things that Jack Anderson is talking about and things that I know are happening, but I want to give some specific examples. There was another article, Associated Press Wire, this week, Tanya Hearst is out of sight but not in mind, and it tells about the San Francisco FBI, and they've interviewed 22,000 people in connection with the case. That's what I call a whole new industry, looking for Patty Hearst. You know how many agents there are, how many reports there are, how much paperwork, how many interviews, telephone calls, following up, put into the computer, 22,000 people trying to locate Patty Hearst. But that is an occupation like looking for UFOs, and it fits into getting these people employed into the search industry, taking on new help, and creating this whole new army. Men coming home from Vietnam and intelligence operations, FBI people, you raise your staff, and then you have them there hired, and you create new violences to keep the team employed once you have them employed. So looking for Patty Hearst, 22,000 cases is mild. If she's gone another month, they'll have 44,000 cases, and these men are being paid by the taxpayers, and that's a whole new industry, looking for Patty Hearst and keeping people employed as investigators. I look at the headlines that I've collected, and I sit back and I wonder, the things that I'm going to talk about, the connection from Dallas, Texas, to international terrorism, because for 8 years I studied political assassinations and who was behind the John Kennedy assassination and how national conspiracies come about. And it seems like a big jump from Dallas, Texas, to be talking on the radio about international terrorism or national terrorism or murder on our streets. But right now, there are new articles coming out. There's one in Argosy this month about E. Howard Hunt on how would you overthrow a government, and the perfect man you would use to overthrow a government would be E. Howard Hunt. There's another one from a magazine written by E. Fletcher Prouty. The title of the article is Focus. Somebody mailed it to me and didn't tell me the name of the magazine, so I'll have to get that for you. But it's about Fletcher Prouty, and he's telling all the links of E. Howard Hunt and Richard Nixon and Frank Sturgis and all the men involved in the Watergate affair right now, many of them in Washington, D.C., Albert Jenner, attorney for Nixon, and Rodino, that were involved in the John Kennedy assassination. So that much literature 2 years after the Watergate is just beginning to pour out on the links of the Watergate to the John Kennedy assassination, and articles too this week from Dallas to Watergate. Well, 2 years ago, I was reading about from Dallas to Watergate. I was writing the articles called From Dallas to Watergate, making the first connections of the White House plumbers to the Kennedy assassination. So now I have to take one more giant leap, maybe 2 years ahead of my time, and hopefully, because the events have come out that illustrate what I was saying more clearly in the last 2 years, it won't take too long to see the link from the Watergate to international national terrorism, and also from Dallas to this terrorism that they're creating. I have to look back over my research of the last years where I followed the study of the assassination of leaders and civil rights leaders, then I followed the manipulation of the courts, and then the manipulation of the people with job scarcity, inflation coming up, and depression seems imminent, and new hardships being created. And then the fourth step is to go after the scapegoat and the enemy list, the third world. And you see the enemy list that the White House had. It wasn't just blacks or Chicanos. It begins into the media people, actors, and so forth, and those are next. So after studying the political assassinations for 8 years, I spent 2 years on the Watergate, and now I'm into terrorisms and bombings. And what I want to do today, and maybe for a few weeks, or maybe just for a series of shows, is to show how the intelligence agents, the military and the intelligence agencies and the police departments are doing the crime on the streets, just like the book by Michael Myerson, is on the Watergate, is called Crime in the Suites, S-U-I-T-E-S, and I call Crime on the Streets. The police and FBI and the intelligence agencies doing murders and filling our prisons and endangering all of our lives in the process as they foment this terrorism that will bring on what Saxby refers to as the police state and warns us about. The first case, I have a whole bunch of list of people to go into as much as time allows. The first news item, for example, this week was the death of a man in San Diego by the name of Bernardo Gallardo, 35 years old, a parolee from Folsom Prison. He got out of Folsom, he went to San Diego, and wanted to reestablish his life down there. He was murdered by a single blast from a 12-gauge shotgun as he stood on the porch of his home in San Diego. Just before he was murdered, he had gone to the Legal Aid Society and told a Richard Walden that his life was in danger because he wouldn't meet the demands of two police officers. Two police officers went to him and said, look, you're the only Chicano living in our neighborhood. We want you guys out of here. You're the only ones living in this neighborhood. We want you guys out of this house or we'll kill you. So what you do is you become an informer for the police department or else we'll plant marijuana on you and make a phony marijuana arrest and you'll go to jail for life. Now, what happened was that Gallardo went to the Legal Aid Society and told them his life was in danger because the police had threatened him, and he took the threat seriously. And if you remember, people like James Carr, friend of George Jackson, was out of San Quentin down in Santa Cruz working on prison reform, and he got a shotgun blast, murdered the same way as he walked out of the door of his home after he had rehabilitated himself. So Gallardo went to the Legal Aid Society and made a tape cassette. He made a 20-minute tape recording and named the two police that wanted to kill him because he would not do what they wanted him to do, and that they threatened to plant evidence and send him back to prison for life to plant it. And he made this tape cassette. What happened was 2 days after he made the cassette, after the men had come to him, the officers told him they would kill him, that everyone, the guys around him would be killed, and that he would be killed. And then he was murdered by this single blast as he came out of his door. Now, after he was killed, the tape existed, naming the police chief. And it's been very hard to get the police department to change around, because they defend each other, they have backup witnesses, they'll murder a guy and say it's in self-defense. But the chief of police now is forced to make a probe because the tape exists. And they've been asked to dismiss the police employees. Their names are Perry Bryan and Harold Phoenix. The complaint's been filed with the U.S. Attorney Harry Stewart, and it's filed with the U.S. Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. The police officers destroyed all evidence they had in the case before the investigators came in. Both officers had received earlier reprimands in terms of threatening people with marijuana charges. And now the chief of police has said that there seems to be, or surfaced in the last 3 to 6 months, more objective evidence in the abuse of police power. Now, this is important because I maintain through my research in the prison system that our prisons are filled with a lot of innocent men that are sending me letters and copies of their cases that have been framed by the police department. The police have planted evidence on them. They've perjured in the court. Foolproof evidence, even people that have committed crimes have admitted. Two cases I've just received recently and know about, I'm trying to help. The person who committed the crimes has on record documented that he did it. The prisons are filled up. The taxpayers are paying money to keep prisons filled with innocent people. The police are perjuring themselves. The police are threatening with murder. And furthermore, they are segregating neighborhoods through the act of murder. The point that I'm making is that I have said many times on this show that the police do plant evidence. The jails are filled with innocent people. And what, another point I want to make is that I've said the best way to end all of this is to have actual documentary record. This man, because he was smart enough to go down and make a tape recorder, he's going to save many lives of Chicanos and blacks in the San Diego area, where these men are going to be killing again, killing other people, and they're not going to determine to segregate their neighborhoods. And it will force an issue to look into evidence that's planted by other policemen. This was a heroic person, this Bernard Gallardo, but he sacrificed his life, but his legend will live on because it will set an example of documentation. This is the kind of thing I've tried to do out in Soledad Prison in our neighborhood near where I live, where I got word that a prisoner named Robert Hyde was going to be murdered and was going to have his brain removed or altered up at Vacaville. I carried it on the air. I made recordings. I called the public officials. I sent letters to them and typed them in advance and put the thing documented in what, as much as I could, what was going to happen, because then if it happens, it may not save Hyde, but it'll save other people, because the people who made the threats still are out there making other threats. Well, four people were approached to murder Robert Hyde, and each one of the four was threatened he'd be killed, and each one of those families contacted me. So this next week I have an appointment to see the district attorney, investigator in Monterey County out in Salinas. The Hyde case is going before, hopefully in court. The guards who made the offers to kill will be on the defensive. The prison system, the California training facility, will be on the defensive this time. The documentation will exist that they do hire prisoners to murder other prisoners, or else they say, we'll kill you, hang you in the cell, put false write-ups, lock you up for life. And then we're going to find out how violence is promised by the authorities, brought down by the authorities, and see where some of this violence is coming from instead of giving lip service. It's this kind of thing that's going to do more than all the LEAA $3.2 billion is doing if it's supposed to be there to solve crime. I want to talk about the kidnapping, the terrorism going down in Mexico. Jose Guadalupe Juno Hernandez, 83-year-old, the father-in-law of the president in Mexico, Mr. Echeverris, his father-in-law, poor man, 83 years old, sick, kidnapped. Why was he kidnapped? The president of Mexico has been making some very revolutionary reforms. He's been talking about putting away the factory and using workers instead of the factory so that people in Mexico would start to be employed. He is beginning to make big changes in the women's movement down there. I just read this week. But one of the articles I read about Echeverria this week came from the Washington Post, dated August 24th, and it said, the Mexican president has been campaigning for the admission of Cuba to the Conference of Latin American Foreign Ministers. Whatever Washington thinks of the move, he thinks it should be done. Echeverria and other Latin leaders see the Foreign Ministers Conference as an alternative political body to the OAS, the Washington Forum, and they want to make a rapprochement with Cuba. The article in the Washington Post said that during the Nixon administration, the relations with Cuba were blocked because of Nixon's friendship with B.B. Rebozo, the most influential of all Cuban expatriates. I also read that Rebozo came in with $600,000 a few years ago, and just recently his wealth was estimated at $7 million. Well, Mr. Hernandez was kidnapped. His son is saying that he's blaming the U.S. imperialists. He says it looks like a CIA operation that has kidnapped my father. You see, people are coming out in the open now. They wouldn't wait weeks or months to say it. He's right on the line. He said the provocateurs could kidnap him to make people fearful of these terrorists. And then he said the headlines down there were, look what the communist radicals are doing. The first headlines that came over said, leftist terrorists blamed for kidnapping this poor old man. But his son came out and said, it looks like a CIA operation to me. And he said, furthermore, I blame Rockefeller and the Ford Foundations for fomenting this to happen. His son said that he was a leftist himself. The father was, but he blamed the Truman Plan, the Colombian Plan, the American imperialists. And even though the headline said, leftist terrorists kidnapped the father-in-law of the president of Mexico, his own said, it's the U.S. imperialists, and blame the Rockefeller and the Ford Foundations for funding the act. Last week, when we went off the air, Kayla, when Dialogue Conspiracy was off, I was just talking about an agent provocateur in Los Angeles, and I want to spend some time on him now. I'm not sure if I can pronounce his name right. You'll have to forgive me. Muharrem Kurbegovic, alias, he called himself the Aliens of America. He kicked up quite a stir in Los Angeles, which I explained is a perfect nest of espionage agents anxious to set up this martial law that Saxby was talking about. This Aliens of America, he said he represented, set off bombs at the airport that killed three people at the airport. He set off bombs at the Greyhound station that tied up the traffic on Sunday for hundreds of people, and he threatened to use poison gases over Los Angeles that would kill people during the next year. Now, what was accomplished by this one man, who I say was an agent of the Reinhard Gehlen CIA espionage operation, what was accomplished by him in his quick moment of history? And now he's playing the deaf mute. He terrorized a city of 3 million people over several weekends. He could link the bombing to his notes, the international thing, calling himself the aliens. He tried to include Chicanos. The motive in his tapes for these murders and the poison gases was that two Chicanos were murdered, and policemen got off, and he brought in the fact that these police were off, but he linked the Chicanos, that he was doing this for them. He used Senator Cranston's name, that Senator Cranston would know who he was. Therefore, the FBI could go in, take all the lists, the mailing list of Senator Cranston. Cranston's running for election this year. You can link this fairly liberal senator to radical terrorism. He spread investigations in every airport. In the airport, the bus terminals, now the lockers can be opened, so you get loss of privacy there. He increased the police force, again, our growing occupation, by hundreds. There was a religious meeting of in town that week, and he hadn't even threatened them in any overt way on a tape, but the police were increased. He fouled up the Watts Festival. They brought in 200 police officers there, and the Watts Festival was broken up, according to the paper, because of fears of terrorism or bombing, and they lost 150,000. This year, the stadium was empty. Their religious overtones, protecting Christians as if Christians were targets from the evil radical terrorists. Well, who is this man, Kurbegovic? What's his lifestyle? What was he doing? He played two roles. One, for 2 years he talked fluently and fairly decently to the people around him. Where he lived, where he worked for 2 years, he didn't say a word. He played a deaf mute. He had two doubles, like Lee Harvey Oswald or James Ray or Sirhan, a look-alike that traveled with him. He had two apartments, one in Hollywood, one on West 6th Street, the Mid-Wilshire District. His background, violently anti-communist. He left Yugoslavia and walked to Germany. He He has a master's degree in hydraulic engineering, a degree in mechanical engineering, considered a brilliant man. Came in the United States in 67, applied for citizenship in 71, and he worked as a design engineer, and he made $1,000 a month. Highly educated, hardly oppressed. What was his shtick, as they say? What was he pushing? He was arrested falsely for indecent exposure March 24, 1971. Now, I've studied espionage operations for 10 years, and what the cover story is when you use an agent is to create an excuse or a motive for their anger. They can't come out of the blue. When he's living in an apartment, has $1,000 a month, and he's been taken into this country, you'd say, what is his motive? So you have to create a dummy slip on him as an excuse for his violence to explain his anger. The excuse in this case was that he was arrested for indecent exposure March 24th, 71. He was arrested, and it was cleared up. He not only was cleared up, but he acted as his own attorney in the case. So he not only has a master's degree in engineering, mechanical, and hydraulic, but he needs to have some legal ability to be able to handle himself in court because he was his own attorney, which brings up the question, how much English did he learn? He speaks Russian, English, Yugoslavian. He applied for a permission to run a dance hall, which totally countered his personality as the engineer, the scientist, no relationships with women, no social activity. He applied for permission to run a dance hall, which allegedly was rejected because of his wanting his false arrest in the indecent exposure case. The dance hall story is, to me, is highly fictitious. This may be on the records, but one man who's a deaf mute and isn't doing any talking and no exchange with women and no social life in the Los Angeles area to come from Germany to Canada and then back down to L.A. where he's to create all this social storm and allegedly turned down on the dance hall story because of the indecent exposure, which didn't actually take place in the first place. When he was turned down on the dance hall application, which is a far cry from his training, he went for 2 years to the RPM Industries, where he went to work, and he stayed there 2 years. He never spoke to anybody at the job. I believe that RPM must be some kind of a front for military agents coming in. It would fit the pattern of Riley Coffee Company, where Lee Harvey Oswald worked, or Jagger's Chili Stovall, where an agent would be placed. He didn't talk at all. He passed notes. He wrote to the boss about bombs and violence, and he brought into the lab nerve gas. He had it there for at least 2 months. The boss knew that he was working in anagrams, the kind of things he had on his tape. He spent notes back and forth about wanting to make bombs. He brought chemicals to work. He played dumb and disassociated himself from the boss. And, of course, the week that he's arrested, they said he was fired. An espionage work that's called disassociation. You remember when E. Howard Hunt was arrested at the time of the Watergate? He was fired from Mullen Associates. That same day he was fired. That's so that you don't have to investigate them further. This gentleman was fired from his case. What about his personal life? He kept two apartments, one in Hollywood, as I say, one on 6th Street. At home with the landlady, he talked, and he talked to the people in the apartment building. He is known to have a double, another man, exactly the same height, the same weight. He was ready to leave the country, which is typical of all of our alleged assassins, our patsies, or people used in espionage. They kick up the storm, get new laws, get new police, break up things like the WASP Festival, the Greyhound transportation, the airport, lockers, and the buses, kill three people, threaten germ warfare, then have a passport and are ready to leave the country. And he was at a travel agency below his building, conveniently located below where he lives, inquiring about trips to South America and elsewhere. They said he stayed alone, again, the loner, not unfriendly, but solitary, compulsive, punctual. And his big fear was, according to the people who knew him, he was afraid of being sent back to Yugoslavia. Now, that is a hold you have on these agents that come from Eastern Europe. If they don't cooperate, they lose their citizenship. Marina Oswald was brought over by the Galen operation and the CIA, taken to Dallas, where she planted evidence, told 40 known lies about her husband, Lee Harvey Oswald, in order to make it look like he was the lone assassin of John Kennedy when he did not assassinate John Kennedy at all. And in exchange, she immediately got her citizenship, and Oswald was suspicious of it because 3 weeks before the assassination, the FBI agent Hastie had approached Marina Oswald and suggested that she could remain in this country. A letter to that effect is in volume 16 of the hearings before the commission on the assassination of John Kennedy. So the hold they had on this poor man was that he would be deported. Now he's in prison. They can give him the death penalty. He has not said a word. He's acting the role of the death mute and seems to be programmed in some way. I'm sure that the job was a safe house. The doubles are exactly like Donald DeFries had a double by the name of Bernard Keaton. Sir Hans' double was Michael Wayne of the Minutemen. James Ray had doubles. John Bridgman, Eric Starvo Galt, and John Sneed. Oswald had doubles. Don Norton, William Seymour, and Gordon Novell. So this poor Patsy will get up in jail like the rest of them. And I felt when the death penalty was reinstated, I've said it before on these shows, the big push for the death penalty is to quickly eliminate Patsies. We get more police. What we got from this person is a fear of terrorist organizations, international, the Aliens of America, linking him to the Chicanos, adding new police force, terror in this city of 3 million, everything tied up that in a social way for weeks, the possibility that he can get chemical gases, then quickly send him off, give him the death penalty, and he's isolated and can't speak about how he got into the system in the first place. He was led a little bit like James Ray, who's unraveling the tale now, untying the knots, but the person is locked up, killed, but the police that are there remain. Another person I have here to talk about, his name is John Mark Gabron, 27. This 2 weeks ago, he was tying up Los Angeles in terror. He was in a mental hospital, treated by Dr. Neff, let out of the hospital, and he went to Griffith Park, tied up Los Angeles again at the time these other bombings were going out. The families couldn't picnic. The golf course was cleared out. The merry-go-round was closed, everything except the zoo. Terrorism, he held two people as hostages. He was dressed in a uniform like Donald DeFries, dressed like a soldier. He had a rifle, a 30.6 with 106 rounds of ammunition. He allegedly had it for a year, kept with him in the VA hospital. He's let out, goes to Griffith Park, holds these hostages. This gentleman was responsible for 325 deaths in Vietnam. He was a highly trained specialist sniper, good at his job. The excuse for his taking people at Griffith Park was that he had a flashback to combat days. But I don't think you leave a man who you're treating psychiatrically in a VA hospital. You don't leave his combat clothes and his weapons around. If he has guilt for killing 325 people, he's not going to go to sleep with his weapon like a teddy bear. So that I believe that these people are allowed out. And what happened was he was told by the psychiatrist who was in charge of him, come back and we'll put you back in the hospital and be okay. But they didn't do that. They broke their promise. The hostages were gone. The SWAT team was called in, the same military SWAT team that was used to kill the SLA. They've been getting rusty there, their uniforms, their weapons, and they have to be put to use. So out they come. The same old SWAT team is called out to the park. The people are cleared. The guy is told then it's perfectly innocent except that the people are terrorized. And the SWAT teams are used, and they practice their terror on the streets, their Sunday routine again. Then they say to him, oh, come on back, John, let's get back into VA. So he walks back the hands of the doctor. They take him and put him in the county hospital, charge him with kidnapping and other serious charges. And instead of taking him back where they promised, to the hospital in Brentwood, he's locked up in the clink. You haven't heard a word about him. It'll be interesting to see what kind of a trial. So that poor dog is used by the police department, by the military, to terrorize people on the streets. The military use their uniforms and show their muscles. And that poor guy, we won't hear from him or Kerbekovic. And they're silenced away. They've done their little moment of history. And that's how the terrorism will be building up on the streets. Another trial I wanted to talk about recently was in San Francisco. A man by the name of Bernardo Gallardo. It sounds similar to the fellow in Los Angeles that was recently murdered that I talked about first. This is Bernardo Gallardo, I want to talk about John Patterson. I made a boo-boo here. I had this, it slipped under another piece of paper. In the news this week is Bobby Kesey, who's charged with the murder of John Patterson in Mexico City. And that is also written up in my SLA article. Mr. Kesey is a member of the CIA. He worked hijacking airplanes. in Thailand and North Vietnam. He was in Hanoi in 1970. He was the only civilian and flew back with the POWs at that time. He did CIA flights into Cuba. Bobby Kesey is charged with the murder of John Patterson in Mexico City, the envoy that was there. Now, the Patterson kidnapping took place just at the time the Patricia Hearst kidnapping was in the news, and we were getting a rash of 22 kidnappings that I'd like to do on a show with you. The envoy was kidnapped. The headline said, Mexican guerrillas kidnap U.S. envoy. Next headline, Mexico leftist blames. The headlines were going, terrorists, guerrilla taking this American envoy. That was in March. In April, the headlines changed, and it says, U.S. explains a blackout on the Mexican kidnap. Another headline I have says, American may have kidnapped the vice consul. Another headline said, diplomat kidnapping, hoax behind the hush, question mark. New headline in April, Mexican authorities doubt the kidnap report. Then in June, a new break, former POW indicted in the envoy's kidnapping. Now, what they call a hoax wasn't a hoax at all, because Patterson's skull and bones were found, and he was murdered. But originally, the early headlines, the Mexican guerrillas did it. This is like the father-in-law down in Mexico, Chavero. Then the left is blamed. Then it heads to, it's a hoax. The Mexican doubt it. Now it comes out in June that an American, a mysterious Bobby Kesey, is involved, that he seemed to have written the ransom note for the Patterson kidnapping. And now it turns out in September that he's being indicted not only for writing the ransom note, but for the murder of Mr. Patterson. Now, what would be the motive of the CIA doing this? The only motive could be to blame worldwide terrorists for the guerrillas, the Third World, for killing an American envoy. The only motive would to spread that CIA Operation Octopus, the article I refer to, Bring the War Home, and to spread terror around the world at the same time that Patty Hearst was kidnapped in America. The background of Kesey is nothing but CIA for many years, and he had help on this job. The article about him in the paper this week said that Kesey had help doing his job. There was more than one man in the case, but he's not being indicted. In all of these cases, there are unindicted co-conspirators who are getting off. The kidnapping takes place. William Williams, he was indicted this week and charged with the Murphy kidnapping down in Atlanta, Georgia. He had a co-conspirator. That person gets off, but the CIA is using these people, either former agents or military, mental patients, regular agents, like in this case, Bobby Kesey, but they're doing the kidnapping and the terrorism. The situation is really serious because while we only have 2 or 3 minutes to go and I decided to talk about this subject in terms of Jack Anderson talking about the U.S. taxpayer supplying the weapons for terrorism and Saxby saying we're going to have a police force warning us about it, it's very important, I think, for those of you who have any faith in me to read that realist article on the SLA that covers all these motives and read your headlines and take every case of a sniper on the highway coming in from Arizona to California, that man was just arrested. Take all of these cases of violence, these murders, and check them out. Save them for, say, 2 months. Throw them away later if you don't want them. But the kidnapping down in Mexico, save these articles, large cases of arson, kidnapping, murder, what they call motiveless crimes, senseless crimes, hostages, jail breaks. If you save these for 2 months and then we do a resume on the show, I think you're going to find more and more agents and secretive business where their mental records are thrown away, their army records are thrown away. If you read in the paper this week, the man who took his airplane into the White House was commended. They said he did a big favor because by his going there, we found out how the airport where the plane wasn't guarded, and we need more missiles at the White House. That outside of just getting 6 months, he still is going to stay in the Army, and he got a backhanded commendation for what he was doing. As a matter of fact, at the trial, this is a private Robert Preston who took the airplane to the White House. They said that you shouldn't be harsh on him because the boy has potential, and it would inhibit his rehabilitation to punish him. The man has potential for stealing this plane and landing on the White House lawn, and now the White House now has missiles and more weapons and more weapon industry around America, so you'll see nothing but tanks and missiles. where our time is up, I'll expect you to be researchers yourself and save some of these articles on terrorism, kidnappings, and violence. And then when I talk about them, you can look them up because they're happening now. With the Kennedy thing, it's hard to go back and look it up. And I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.